animal here. On July 13th, I heard a guy at Starbucks this morning that said 13 is a lucky number. Today's July 13th, 2011. Just think how lucky it's going to be in 2013. Anyway, whenever I want to tell you something, as usual, whenever I read advice about how to conduct yourself on social media, I always see the advisor tell you to be authentic. It's like a fetish word, a fetish word. The new priests of social media, the priests of social media are always telling you to bow down to this new idol of authenticity. That's the kind of corny stuff you'd find in a regular article in a newspaper. But I had to use it because it's true. But I have to tell you something. I learned something about this authenticity stuff from Jerry Albright yesterday, the announcer on my own show. I saw a Twitter posting on his Twitter page, and this is what he said. Modesty prevents me from being so transparent. Modesty prevents me from being so transparent. At first glance, that might not seem like very much, but there's a world of wisdom locked up in those words. There I am, using all those hackneyed phrases again. Sometimes I have to. Listen, what's Jerry saying there? He's saying that sometimes authenticity is not good. Sometimes authenticity is not considerate. Sometimes it's not fun. He's saying that it's not always good because you can't go around telling everybody the truth about your great success. Why not? That's going to make other people feel like garbage when they compare themselves to you. You see, Jerry's a prophet of the old school. I'm still using that biblical imagery. He's a prophet of the old school. He believes it's not always good to tell everyone what you're thinking. Sometimes it's better to keep things to yourself. And you know what? The new social media advisors, they believe the exact same thing. They just pretend to support authenticity because it sounds good. It makes them seem like nice people, like all those people who espouse nonviolence. Some people like to tell you they don't believe in war, and that's good. Jerry, stop your heavy breathing, okay? I'm in my speech. Anyway, all that nonviolent stuff, it works as long as you got someone else to protect you, and authenticity sounds good too, as long as you're not authentic about information that makes you vulnerable. And these advisors, they don't want you to be vulnerable. They only boost authenticity to suck other people into your communication realm. It's a way to show off, that's all. They don't want you to tell everyone bad things about yourself because authenticity in business blogging is sales. Authenticity in social media is sales. And as my good friend, the funny banker, says, sales is lying. Sales is lying. When you put your best foot forward, you're hiding something else. And Jerry, what's that something else?
What's that something else?
You want me to say it? What show is this?
A recruiting animal show!
During my talk.
Dude, that wasn't my cue. What's that something else?
Okay,
well. We rehearse this stuff every single day.
I thought you'd figure it out.
And I never heard that. I didn't know if I was supposed to yell authenticity or transparency.
I thought you'd figure it out. Sorry. I thought you'd figure it out.
I was just sitting here so excited about myself and my modesty.
Yeah.
That.
Okay.
I don't have to pay you a dollar for that, do I?
Let the record reflect that you aren't as quick as you think. Anyway, Ed Newman, are you here? Can we hear you?
I am here, animal.
The eagle has landed. The eagle has landed.
Okay, you can hear him, Jerry. Everyone can hear him. Congratulations. Ed, let's just start off with first things first. You have a lousy Twitter name. Everyone agrees with me. Numa Ed. Newma. ED, Pneuma Ed. You know, no one knows what it means. If you tell someone on the phone, you have to spell it for them. Pneuma Ed. Like, why did you pick that? I mean, are you kind of silly or slow or on social media? What's up?
Yeah, there's no question I'm a little slow on the uptake with the social media, but it's just a handle that I've used. It sort of dates me back to my first corporate network ID.
You know, there's a rule on this show, Ed, don't be boring. You can't be boring. Just get to the point, will you?
Last five, first two.
Oh, whatever.
That's what it is.
Okay, let's move on. Pneuma Ed, I got another question for you. You're the first guy we've had here that's ever worked for Korn Ferry, the pinnacle of recruiting, in my opinion. Korn Ferry, they're the most famous international firm. But either you're lying in your picture on your Twitter page, your Twitter picture is a lie, or the Korn Ferry picture is a lie, because the Korn Ferry picture makes you look like 20 years older than the Twitter picture and a lot huskier. So which is which? I mean, did they just want you to seem like a mature man, or do you just want to seem like a young guy to us? Which is it?
I think it's a little bit of both, but probably more I'm trying to be a little younger.
Oh, so that picture you got on Twitter, that's like from when you were in university 25 years ago?
No, that was within the last 5 years.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, then you should have been complaining when they put your picture up there on Korn Ferry. Something's weird about that. That's like a transformation. I always wonder why those executive pictures look so inhuman. You don't look human there, okay? You don't look like someone I'd want on my show, and yet on your Twitter picture, you look fine. Anyway.
As compared to your strikingly human puppet picture.
It's better than what he's got on Korn Ferry. Okay, let me just move on with the introduction. Now, I billed you as a recruiter because, you know, you talk a lot about recruiting, but that's not right. You're an HR guy, yes or no?
Yes, I'm an HR guy.
Okay, you're an HR consultant, actually. In fact, your specialty is consulting about recruiting technology. Am I right about that?
You are correct.
Okay, because it's confusing reading all the stuff on your blog, and you told me, just read my blog and you'll figure out what to talk to me about. And I did read your blog, as you will see. Anyway, so you were an HR generalist, then you became an HR recruiting technology specialist, and you went to work for an HR recruiting technology firm, and then you started your own company, the Pneuma Group, which you eventually sold to Korn Ferry, and then you worked for Korn Ferry running it. And it was like double the size. Is that right?
Yeah, I didn't run Korn Ferry. I ran.
I didn't say you ran Korn Ferry. You ran the group that you sold to them. Is that right?
Yeah. That is correct. Plus, the Future Step operation within the U.S. Mm.
You ran Future Step. You ran the whole operation
in the United States. Yes.
Oh, what do you know? Hey.
Very cool.
Okay.
Very cool.
Let me go back though, dude. I'm an HR guy.
Go ahead.
I'm an HR guy, but I am also I've been a recruiter. I don't pretend that I was some high powered recruiter. I was definitely one of the more corporate HR recruiter types. Mm. I got exposed to third party when I joined this small, that's how I kind of got into consulting. I joined this really small recruiting company that recruited for SAP. And we had to hire 100 new consultants every 6 weeks for their training program.
Okay, let's just jump to that. That's one of my questions. But first, I got to talk a little faster, will you? Okay. How did you said you had to recruit 100 consultants a week. How'd you do that? I mean, how many people worked on that project?
A month.
It was every 6 weeks, and we had probably about 15 guys. We spent, you know, gazillions of dollars advertising, and it was pretty much just stampede recruiting. We just jammed people through interviews and filled seats. So it was one of those deals where you've got to fill the seat because the training program was paid for. And so if you missed a few times, no big deal. You filled the seat and those that made it through the program stuck, and we just had to fill it every 6 weeks.
You know, I should have told you to have a caffeine drink before you came on the show. But so you didn't really – I just want to – so that's stampede recruiting. That's like a new term for me. And you didn't really, you know – qualify these guys? If they just had some kind of basics and they could walk and talk, you hired them. Is that right?
No, well, we qualify, but you get down to 2 weeks before the training started, and you just start lining, you know, who can we make offers to today to fill the seat? And you might take some risks on the guys that didn't necessarily, you know, meet the threshold.
And what was the crash and burn rate? Like, out of, you know, you're hiring that many people, how many worked out and how many didn't?
Oh, I'd say probably about 20% fell out.
Really? That's a high. That's a lot. Yeah. Jerry, wouldn't you say so?
Not really.
20% failure rate?
Yeah.
It's huge.
You know, it wasn't all at once, but, yeah, 20% probably over the course of the first year.
Okay. You said on your blog that you were in the Men of La Mancha in high school. Is that right?
I was, man. Dude, I was a class thespian in high school.
Class thespian or the class lesbian? Now, look.
Thespian, dude. Thespian.
Okay, lesbian, thespian. Okay, we're going to sing. We're going to sing The Impossible Dream together. You ready?
Yeah, I am.
Right.
Cool.
Who's that, Janice?
Yes.
Janice, okay. You know, you have to pick it up from where we are. Yeah, I'll just say something else before we go ahead, though. Let me just see where... Let me find where that is. Anybody else want to talk? Okay, here he is. Now he had Ed had an article or a video clip on his blog, and he said it's very important if you're going to relate to different generations, they actually know what they think about. So The Impossible Dream, I mean, that was just a part of my life when I was growing up. It was a very famous song, maybe for Janice too, maybe for some other people here. But if you were born in the 80s or 90s, you might not know it. So what you have to do is make sure you know what's current in order to talk to the kids in your organization. Is that what you were trying to tell us there, Ed, in that posting?
Yeah, I think so. I can't remember the posting exactly.
It was a video of some guy with a beard trying to act like a down-home hick with, you know, essential knowledge. But, I mean, he had a good point.
Yeah,
If you're a woman working in an office with all men, you should read the sports pages, even if you're not interested, just so you can have something to talk to them about. It's the same thing with these generations. You have to know what's happening today, right? And also, those younger guys, if they want to suck up, they should, you know, figure out who was popular in the 1960s or 70s or 80s, whenever their boss was younger. Is that a good idea? Did you do that, Ed?
I think that's a good idea, yeah.
Did
I,
you
I don't
do
know
it yourself?
Can
I ask a question?
Nah.
Yeah, go ahead. Mike Astringer.
Did you take an energy drink before this show?
No, I'm my usual self. In fact, I'm a little low-key, I think.
Yeah, I'm saying you're a little low-key. Can you gulp one down before the show's over?
Oh, no. He's
fine. Do you have a question for this guy, Mike? You're more in a business related to him, I think, than I am. Do you have a question for him before we sing?
I will, but not yet.
Okay, you will, but not yet. Okay. Are you ready there, Eddie?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'm gonna play the music in the background. It'll drown us out. You don't have to worry too much anyway, okay? Here we go.
My quiz.
I couldn't hear you guys. Okay.
Oh, we were
okay,
there.
Okay, now, Ed, I think Ed's got a – I watched the videos. I watched the videos on Ed's blog, and he's got kind of a fixation with these heroes who sacrifice themselves. Am I right about Ed? You got a thing about that, don't you?
I don't know, maybe.
Didn't you have all that stuff about Braveheart marching around and somebody says, I'm out of here,
yeah.
And he says, no, it doesn't matter if we die. We're going to die with honor. Didn't you put that up there?
I did. I'm a movie buff, and I thought it was a sort of a nice little montage of inspirational.
Yeah, you got a thing about this, about the suffering hero. Is that right?
Nah, I don't think so. Just,
oh, I do. I think you do. Also, you know what? I'll get into the heavy stuff. I was going to save this for the end if we didn't have any time, but you have an entry there that you gave the wrong title to. I would call it White Boy Lost in the Blues, because here's how you start it out. You say, have you ever noticed that the director of diversity in most companies is very rarely a white guy? You might think that I'm just another white guy with a chip on my shoulder, but when it comes to listening to a different drummer, white guys are diverse too. So you want to talk about that?
About that particular post?
Post,
yeah.
Hey, come on, wake up! You're the guest! This isn't the HR happy hour! Come on!
Yeah, basically, you know, if you look at diversity programs in America and the role of diversity director, there's very, very few of those positions are white guys.
Yeah, but what you're arguing here, come on, Ed, what you're arguing is that diverse thinking, if you're sort of an offbeat guy, if you take the road not taken, that's your thing.
Yeah.
See, Ed's got
that's
a very, you know, he's denying it now, but he's got, here's how his about page, it's kind of dumb, okay? But he doesn't tell you how he started off. He just goes into the Newman Group, and you have to figure out he's an HR guy. But he starts off by saying, you know the Robert Frost poem, The Road Not Taken, right? He says, I like to zig when other people zag. He likes to think of himself as a different kind of thinker. And he thinks that that kind of person should be part of diversity programs. That's not what diversity is for. Come on, Ed. You are a white guy with a chip on your shoulder. I just wanted to tell you that, okay?
No. If you look at diversity, dude,
Don't call me dude. Call Jerry dude.
All right, animal. If you look at diversity and the programs in the U.S., it's all around compliance and
mm-hmm.
And meeting the old affirmative action. But it's now packaged under this thing called diversity, and there's supposed to be some business case around if you have diverse thinking, you're going to be a better business. But nobody really focuses on that crap. They focus on, you know, how do we have a diverse candidate? Are they black? Are they Hispanic? Is it a woman? They don't consider a white guy who might have a completely different view on things as being valuable to bring some diverse thought into
I totally agree. I'm with you.
Yeah, but it doesn't belong
that's
in a
right
program.
On the money.
It doesn't belong in a government program.
But that's the thing. It's not supposed to be a government program anymore. I mean, the whole movement from affirmative action to diversity and inclusion was to get away from being this government-driven thing. It's not about quotas anymore.
That's not true. Wake up. Come on. You were with
Corn Ferry. Well, that was my point. That's my point of the post is that you're right. That's not true. But it should be.
Okay, here you got a post. Does anyone want to say anything to Ed before I continue?
I got a question. In
go ahead,
opinion,
Janice. Welcome back, Janice. Janice, exec job coach on Twitter. Exec job coach. And Ed is Pneuma Ed. What a genius name. NEWMAED. Pneuma Ed. Pneuma Ed. We'll know it at the end of the show. Janice, go ahead.
My question is, do you believe that the trend is toward meeting quotas or toward trying to enable a diverse workplace, which is not the same thing?
I think the trend is going in that direction, but what happens is most corporations try to jump on a bandwagon and they just apply their old thinking to the new concept. And so rather than actually doing something different and really looking at how do we create a diverse organization that's not just about the color of people's skin and their gender, you know, they're actually doing something different.
Okay,
so
you know, this is
everyone's
sorry,
jumping
Janice,
on the trend,
boring.
But they're not making.
I covered this enough.
It's
well,
not
look,
boring.
Ben,
I find it interesting. It's an interesting topic.
Okay,
diversity and inclusion is not about your life experience, your thinking, your outside-the-box ideas. It's about your skin color, period.
Okay.
Follow-up
yeah.
question.
Oh, go ahead, Janice, but don't let him
Quick.
Talk. You just talk, okay? Say what you're thinking.
All right. I believe that in the United States that the administration and party that is in will determine the trend and the style when it comes to diversity and affirmative action. Do you agree?
Okay.
I'll disagree before you either agree or
okay,
disagree.
I want to move ahead. Sorry, enough of the diversity. We understand what he's thinking. He's like a regular Walden Pond Thoreau guy. Anyway, look. Be a good customer. You had a posting called Be a Good Customer. You wrote,
yep.
I had been such a dick to these people, and it was our own fault. The people I had been interacting with at the company, at the vendor, were doing their best to help me. From the moment I realized that, I changed my ways. I kept my frustration in check and always thanked them for their efforts. And after a while, it was an amazing difference. When I called, instead of being sent directly to the supervisor, the customer service rep would listen to me and get me to the technician who could solve my problem. That's with your resume technology. And here's what you conclude. If you want to get good customer service, you need to start by being a good customer. If you want to get good customer service, you need to start by being a good customer. But I think our clients, the clients of recruiters, are not being good customers, and I'm wondering if we should teach them how to be good customers. And do you want me to explain what I mean, Ed, before you go ahead and answer?
Yes, I would like for you to explain that.
I picked up – thank you, Ed. Thanks. I picked up a job order for a sales position. I was working through an HR contact. That's how they work in some companies. They don't let you talk to the hiring manager. I don't know why they give you an HR person who doesn't know anything, right? So
right.
The company gave us – I told her, look, you know, if you don't know anything – you're very nice. I said, but why don't you let me talk to the hiring manager? So she set up a half-hour meeting, a telephone conference, and we had a chat. For some reason, he didn't like me. I knew right away. But anyway, the company gave us the base salary. It was a sales job, but they said they didn't have the commission package worked out yet, but they'd have it for us soon. So I started working on it. Was that a mistake, and should I have taught the customer something?
I'm not sure why. What was bad about that customer?
Okay, they give me the base salary, but they don't tell me what the potential there is. There, the quota, what the potential for the sales rep to earn is. That's like half the salary. It's not the whole salary. Let me go on with the story if you don't have an answer yet. I found them some candidates who seemed to be making the same amount of money. So if the candidates were all making the same amount, I assume that was the going rate in the field, okay? The hiring manager, I sent in the resumes. The hiring manager wanted to see them. He didn't complain about the money. Listen to that. He interviewed them quickly. He passed them on to other people in the company for second rounds. A week later, I'm waiting for feedback. No feedback except that they were good, right? And I get an email. It says, aren't you going to send me any more people? Should I have kept looking for people? I had two good candidates. I got no feedback on them, and I didn't even know at this point what the money was. Should I have taught the customer something, Ed, or do you want more information?
I mean, it's your choice, man. If you want to take the risk, I would say you're way out on a limb right there. Unless you've got something firm in hand, if it's an existing customer that you've done a lot of business with, sure, why not?
I'd never dealt with them before. Then I get an email about the money. I ask, what's the money? Do you know yet? They send me a note, and the base in the note is less than they gave me in the initial meeting. Okay? Even the base changed, and the whole package was less than what the candidates were earning. What would you do, Ed? What went wrong in that situation? Come on. Were they bad customers? Yes, I'd say so. Would you agree?
Yeah, but I think that's also – you were being a bad recruiter, Animal.
There were two things you could have done, Animal. It's Kathy. You should have done an intake form, taken down all the information, sent it to them, gotten their approval on it, and moved from there. That way there's no questions that are unanswered.
Okay, so if you ask them 10 times for the money and they keep saying, we don't know yet, what's
you
going on?
You can't work it until you know it.
Move on to the next customer.
Okay, does everybody agree? Anybody got an opinion? No? Anybody else want to comment? No? Okay, so you don't teach your customer to be a good customer. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. You really can't. I'm talking about if you're playing. You have both sides of that equation, right? Sometimes you have customers, and sometimes you are a customer. The only time you have control over the customer is when you're the customer.
You can't. No one could have smartened you up. You were good. As you said, you were committed to being a jerk. Is that right? And no one could have taught you any different until you realized it yourself. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Okay, well, listen to this.
Can I ask Kathy Manis something real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
By intake form, do you mean what typical recruiters call a job order form?
Yeah, but you can get even more detailed than that. It could be a job order form, but we go as far as, you know, what candidates do you not want to see? We make it so detailed that, you know, there's no question by the time we start the job order.
How is the word intake defined?
We have a meeting.
Oh, are you going to quibble about the words, Jerry? Come on.
Words are all we've got, animal.
Well, intake means...
It's all we've got, man. Forget
okay,
it.
Look,
intake
okay,
form.
There's an article on ERE by Kevin... There's an article by ERE on Kevin Wheeler. Are you listening, Ed?
Yeah.
Okay, well, please, just sound a little enthusiastic. You're sapping all my fun out of me, okay? Say to yourself, I'm happy to be here. This is exciting.
I am happy
this
to be here.
This is a real opportunity, yeah. Where else are you going to get to sing? You haven't sung since you're out of high school. When you sing at home, your kids tell you to shut up. Okay.
Great song.
Great song,
now, look,
too.
Yeah, great. Now, look here. Kevin Wheeler, he outlines four traits of a great recruiter. Number three is, rather than rely on a generic recruiting brand, the great recruiter brands every job and manager as unique. They know how to steer the right candidates to the right managers because they have deep knowledge of the needs and capabilities of each candidate through their networking skills and ability to influence. And one of the comments said, good recruiters really understand the job they're hiring for. They can communicate the differentiating factors, right? They can handle questions and come across as a credible advocate. So Kevin is saying you have to. They really know the candidate skills. The other guy is saying they understand the job from the company side. I just gave you an example where I talked to the VP, and they didn't tell me anything. He resented the fact that he had to explain anything to me. You cannot get the information you need from many companies. I've dealt with big brand-name companies over the last year or two, and no matter how important the job is, they give you as little information as possible. They don't want now. They don't even want to put you through to the hiring manager. Would you agree with me, Ed?
That's the case, or that's a bad situation?
That it's the case. I'm running into it all over the place.
I think it depends. Unless you have a relationship with the company, if you have no relationship, sure, that's going to be the case. You're going to get very little. You've got to make a decision. Are you going to take a risk?
Let us remind ourselves here. Animal is absolutely, staunchly against visiting any client. He will not bring them donuts, pizzas, business cards, nothing. And now we find Animal's running into some snags getting the info. Wonder if you slipped over there for a sandwich one time, what you might find out, bub.
And
yeah, you gotta pick up a few bar tabs, Animal.
Yeah, do you do that? Are you a cupcake recruiter? Do you get cupcakes for your clients to suck up to them, ingratiate yourself to them?
No,
like that?
Cocktails and appetizers, but not.
But
not
you do visit with them, right, Numa?
What's that?
You do get visit with them, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, how could you not?
I think.
But
Animal
remember,
thinks,
I wasn't selling
I
recruiting.
I do think Animal thinks 300 tweets are worth a dozen cupcakes.
Yeah, none of those guys are on Twitter. Okay, anyway, I have these problems. Jerry was talking so much, I didn't hear what Ed said. Ed, did you go out and drink with the clients?
I absolutely did, yes.
Really? And you were with Corn Ferry. You were in Philadelphia or somewhere in Pennsylvania, right?
Correct.
Were all your clients local? I don't think so, because you said you had some on the West Coast.
Yeah, it was all over the country.
And you always flew out there with them? I don't think so.
Yeah, I did. I very rarely had customers in the Philadelphia area. It was pretty much
okay. But you were, are you talking when you were a recruiter or when you were a consultant?
No, this is technology. I never really had customers as a recruiter. I mean, the third party recruiting I did was for SAP. It was one customer.
You know,
always.
Am I asking you the wrong questions? You know, should I be have been asking you about recruiting technology? Is that what this show should be about?
Hey, Animal.
What? I'm asking the guy a question. Numa. I'll call him Numa just like you. I like that. Numa.
I just need to jump in. Andy Gregory would like to give a halftime report.
Before the halftime report, can I just make a suggestion, Animal?
Go ahead, Kingfish.
You got a guy here who built a company out of nothing, built a team, sold the company, and is now off doing his own thing. Why don't you ask him questions about what that was like?
I'm not smart enough. You ask him. This is Dave Manister from ERE. Go ahead. You're a businessman. You ask him. I'm only a recruiter. You ask him the questions. They'll tell you what the guy's doing now. He quit his job so he could spend more time with his kids, and he's just hanging around the beach doing nothing, thinking about the future.
Now that deserves respect right there.
Yes, that's the best story of all.
Love it.
Go ahead, Dave. Ask him a question. But first, let Andy tell us what's wrong with the show so far.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to, in case you just tuned in, I wanted to recap the first 30 minutes. Number one, I clearly admire a white guy who's willing to tackle the topic of diversity. Number two, I believe we need to source some energy drink sponsors for the program. And, you know, I got to tell you, in all the hours I've contributed, listened to the Animal Show, I don't ever recall hearing anyone say the word dick until this episode. That's all I have.
I got to tell you, I wondered if I should do that, but it was there. He said it about himself as a customer, and it was emphatic about how awful he was. So I just thought I should put it in there. But that was questionable, and thank you for calling me on that, Andy. I appreciate it.
Have heard that wrong, because I really thought that you meant he had to be more of a private investigator and find out more about what's going on with his client. You mean dick as in...
Asshole.
Yeah, over me.
Let's stop. Let's stop with that language, okay? I'll learn my lesson from Andy. Thank you. I'm not going to let it degenerate. Slippery slope. It's happening right now. Dave Manister, go ahead.
Yeah.
Ask this guy the questions that I should be asking him, but make sure he answers them a little more peppy than he wants to.
Ed, be peppy. So you're an HR professional. And at some point, you decided to start up the Newman Group. Why did you do that? What was behind it? What was it like in the early days?
Yeah, so I was an HR guy, and really fell into consulting. I thought I was going to be a corporate HR guy my entire career. And when I moved to Philadelphia, took this job to recruit for SAP, they outsourced the recruiting. This was probably one of the first outsourced recruiting deals in history. And so as an outsourced recruiter, we did that SAP gig, and that's when I realized that corporate HR is probably not where I wanted to be. And within that business, I started a consulting practice. So it was all sort of by happenstance. And, you know, big corporate companies, Fortune 100 companies, spent anywhere from $1 to $2 million on their applicant tracking systems that they didn't get anything out of them. They were horrible. They were boat anchors. And we had just implemented the same technology to run this SAP recruiting operation pretty successfully. And I knew that would be some tangible and valuable knowledge to share with these big companies. And we turned it into a consulting practice. So that's how the whole thing came about. And then, the business owner, this small company business owner, ended up getting really schizophrenic as the business got bigger. He started to to spend money in bad ways and started losing money, and so I needed to get out before it was going down. And I took about 18 months to go work for Spherion back when it was interim services.
Hey, you know what? Let's take a vote. Let's take a vote. I mean, I respect the hell out of Dave Manister, but does anybody find this interesting? Is anybody finding? I want to vote. Who
yes,
finds
I want
this
him to
great?
Keep talking because I want to see how I can get my company bought by Korn Ferry.
Okay, you can call him up and ask him that. Okay, do you want to get to that? Does anybody else find this interesting besides Mike A. Stringer? Come on, say yes if you're. I don't hear any enthusiasm. Dave, what you have to do to be an interviewer, just let me explain it to you. You have to narrow the questions. You have to get right in there, right? You know what you want to ask him. What is it about his story that you want to find out, Dave Manister?
All right, this is why you're a pro, Animal.
Yeah, I'm a real pro.
So
okay. Don't let
so
him just wander.
Early days, what was when you were building your business? What was the best decision you made, and what was the worst decision you made early on?
Well, I don't think I've ever made any bad decisions.
Try again.
That's his kind of humor. He thinks he's making a joke. You know what? I read an article this morning. It said if you're not funny, don't try it. That's for you, Ed. Go ahead.
So the worst decision I ever made was I tried to launch my own technology, digital pen and paper, and wasted a hell of a lot of money trying to get that off the ground. It was basically a digital pen that would, when people fill out an application form, it would load a database. Failed miserably. Best decision I ever made, actually wrote about it today. I hired someone right after 9/11 when all indicators were to not hire.
Okay, now let me take over because I have a question about that. 9/11 happened. Enron was your biggest client. They started to go south. In fact, they might have collapsed entirely. And so you had this woman. So your article was all about, you know, just making gut decisions from your gut. I don't think that was a hiring decision made from your gut. You had worked with this woman before. She was a totally known quantity to you. You were in Pennsylvania. She was on the West Coast, and you wanted to hire her to represent you as a consultant out there, right? Business started going down, but you decided to hire her anyway just because that was your gut decision. But it wasn't a gut hire. You knew she was a great hire, right?
But, Animal, do you know how ballsy it is to hire someone when your business is going through the floor?
Okay, so
it's a different kind of gut decision. I agree with you. I didn't make any gut decisions. Everybody I hired had to be somebody that I knew. So that take that out. That's I wasn't making those kinds of gut calls. I wanted to know anybody that worked for me.
Okay, but you've also got a principle. Now that the economy is improving, people are still a bit shy to hire. Some of them are hesitant. You say that they should be hiring. Don't be afraid to hire more people when the economy is on an upswing. And I'm wondering if recruiters can use that as a line to encourage people to hire now.
I think so.
How would you do that if you were me?
Well, if they're, you have to know something about their business. Is their business growing or not? Do they have if they have growth goals? Probably going to have some growth goals right now. These last couple of years, rather than going flat, their company's been putting out targets to be larger at the end of the next year. And if they've got growth goals, how many people they have to have on board to produce that business? And
okay,
if they're not hiring, they're not going to be able to drive their revenue.
Yeah, don't try to do it on a shoestring. You're going to slit your own throat. That's your principle, right?
Exactly.
Okay, and so recruiting offices, should they do the same thing? Don't be afraid to hire recruiters right now?
Yeah, I would say absolutely, because the business is coming, and if you wait until the business shows up, you're not going to be able to deliver it. You won't be able to take advantage of the business that's there.
And you believe quite firmly that the economy is improving. The thing is, the media reports on every little tick up and down, and that generates a scare mentality. Is that right? That's your vision, right?
I agree.
But the big picture's good, and that's what you have to think in terms of. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's absolutely always risk that something big's going to happen and crater everything. You know, a terrorist attack or a tsunami or something like that. But, you know, from a business cycle perspective, we are on the upside. And probably what's going to happen is finally when the media starts saying we're out of the recession, we're going to be getting ready to go into the next one.
Okay.
So now's the time.
Now let me ask you something. Let me ask you something. You're not a great speaker. You know, maybe you're smart, but you're not a great speaker, and yet you've been very successful as a leader. They're always telling you you have to have communication skills to, you know, garner enthusiasm from the crowd. That's not true, is it?
You're just a little intimidating, Animal.
I don't think so. I heard you. You went out and you were on another show yesterday, an HR show, on Dave's website. He knows who you are. And I heard you there. You talked the exact same way. And those guys weren't intimidating, okay? Anyway,
Maybe I suck.
Okay, maybe you do, yeah. So anyway, I did say you do suck in your communications. Sorry, Lou Brenda. She said I offended her with the risque language. I apologize already, okay? Anyway, on another one of your blog postings, because you just told me to go to your blog. You were kind of – first you said you're honored to come on the show, and then you said, well, you know, just go look at my blog. I got nothing special I want to talk about. So I did look at your blog, and you said recruit people to your talent pipeline, not to a job. You said we need to start recruiting to the pipeline instead of a job. If you recruit 10 people for a job, 9 of them will get pissed off. If you recruit them to the pipeline, you've sent the message that this could take some time, that we like you and want to stay in touch with you until we find the right role, the right place. That only works if you're in a niche, right? If you're a generalist, you cannot approach someone like you're going to be their long-term buddy. Am I right about that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you obviously have to have something in mind for that individual. You got to be able to keep them interested in staying in touch with you. But
You know what a generalist is. You know what a generalist is. You might not be working that same field for some time or even ever.
Right, but what if you do?
I think, Animal, that strategy works very, very well for corporate recruiters, probably not so well for agency recruiters.
Okay. You want to ask him a question about it, or you have a question yet, Mike?
You're doing a great job, Animal.
This guy needs your zingers. Come on. You come back after a long time and shut up. Contribute a little. Put your
Animal needs
there.
Your zingers, Mike. Come on.
I know, but I get hammered for him, so I just keep my mouth open.
Don't pay any attention to him. I get hammered. I think Jerry left already. He must be having lunch or a drink or something.
I'm getting
hammered. Anyway. That recruiting to the pipeline, I didn't call it that, but that's how I recruited for my business for 10 years.
Internal hires or for clients?
No, for my own business.
So that sort of justifies my point. If you're recruiting on a corporate level or you're recruiting for your own company, that's one thing. But what Animal's saying is,
as a third party recruiter, why couldn't you do that all day long?
To take that strategy.
But no, as an agency recruiter, why couldn't you do that all day long? I mean,
guys like Animal are all over the map. They're not working on the same two racks in the same geographic area every day.
Yeah, but forget about the racks. It's not you want to make contacts with people who are going to someday you're going to be able to fit into a rack.
I agree.
It's not about the rack.
It's synergy, people.
Hey, I am a talent agent, third party recruiter, and I come across really cool jobs all the time. You want to stay in touch with me, right? And you form a relationship and say, you know, I don't necessarily work in that particular niche right now, but someday I might, or I might have a colleague who is,
Did you hear what I said at the beginning of the show? Sales is lying. That's what you're doing right now. Okay.
No, he's not.
I'm not lying.
Yes, he is.
No, he's not. I have a couple of interviews set up today with people that I do not have jobs for.
You do basically corporate recruiting as a consultant. That's much different than being a third-party contingency recruiter.
Not really, Mike. I mean,
sure it is. How are you paid?
I'm salaried.
That's the difference.
Yeah, I mean, you're obviously going to spend more time on activities that are closer to the cash register, right? So,
jobs are always different. That's what I'm trying to say. I never know. It's not as a corporate recruiter usually works in one venue.
Yeah, okay.
Mine
let me just deal
all
with
over
this.
The map.
Kathy, let me deal with this. You were recruiting a chef or a tree surgeon a few weeks ago, right? A tree surgeon? Am I right about that?
No. He was an arborist who was also in sales. Now I'm looking for a business
sales
engineer,
arborist.
And Maureen, I found him.
Arborist. Okay, you were looking for an arborist. Now, how often, when's the next time you're going to be looking for an arborist?
With that company, hopefully very soon.
Okay, so that's a niche for you now. Now, listen, I want to move on. Ed. Are you still there, Numa? Okay.
I'm still
you
here,
also
dude.
Said.
Oh,
you also
Animal,
said,
by the way, Shally gave your show a thumbs up today.
Great. Thank you, Shally.
That says a lot more about Shally than it does about this show.
I'm going to give Shally some good advice. He might hate me for it. But he posted on Twitter today. He posted a link to an article. But first, he sent you to his Posterous blog, which has got a great name, Shallify, but there's no article there, and the link isn't even in a prominent place. You have to search for the link, and then you find it, and it takes you to some other
I know, it's the same thing today.
That's not very good, okay? Now back
to Numa. I have to compliment Shally in that he was smart enough to hire the beautiful and talented Kathy Manis.
Oh, my
okay.
gosh.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Wow.
Now,
thank you.
Now, moving on, Numa,
you
I've got an
might.
Audience. I've got an audience.
Yeah.
I've got an audience. Okay? All the chit-chat, that's for Jerry's show. Your performance is being monitored based on your pipeline. What does that mean, Ed?
Your performance is being monitored
based... Yeah, you said when your performance is being monitored based on your pipeline, you start to pay closer attention to growing your pipeline than closing deals. What does that mean exactly?
Yeah, what that means is you start getting enamored with all of these hot candidates that you have, but you haven't done the due diligence to screen out the ones that are going to end up falling out.
Yeah, but I'll come to that because that was an interesting thing about asking the hard questions. But do some recruiting offices, or is that a sales pipeline? Is somebody evaluating pipeline?
Either one, sales pipeline or recruiting pipeline.
Your pipeline is your database of candidates. Is that what you're saying, like your Rolodex?
It's not just it's not your database of candidates. It's the slate for the particular job order.
Oh,
right?
Okay, so your point was then you said the candidate is perfect on paper. The client is in your target market. The type of deal, it's right in your wheelhouse. But you know there's a showstopper in there somewhere, and you're afraid to ask the hard questions. So you have a list of hard questions. I'm going to read through them, okay? Number one, are the economics going to work? Does that mean that they're willing to pay what the candidate wants? Is that what that means?
Yes.
Isn't it funny that I have to ask that question? I wasn't 100% sure what you meant. I don't know if I'm silly or if you just didn't say it as clearly as you might have, okay? Next, I didn't understand this one. Do you know if it's competitive? Who is your competition? What does that mean, that there's other recruiters bringing in other candidates?
Exactly.
Okay. Then you say, so who do you ask that question? You ask yourself. Is that a question you ask yourself?
No, you ask the client. It's a hard question that people don't ask. They don't ask the customer that question, and then they find out they lose it to some competition that they didn't know they had.
So what do you say? How many other recruiters are working on this position, right?
Yeah.
And is there anybody else you're, you know, really into? Is that what you ask them?
And you probably would follow up by also asking, do you have any internal candidates you might put into this position? Because that's
right,
another
okay.
form of competition.
Yeah, just so you know, I've had clients that say, no, we looked at the internal candidates and, you know, we want to go outside. And then when you find them people, they say, oh, sorry, we were told we have to hire internally. What do you do in a situation like that, Ed?
You get pissed off. Maybe you don't do business with them again, or maybe you go take them out to dinner and buy them drinks so they don't do it to you next time.
Okay.
But you still got to ask.
Do you know
and
how
you
rank?
If you ask the question.
Okay. Do you know how you rank in comparison to the competition on value and on price? What does that mean? Are you charging more than them? Is that what you have to find out?
Yeah. Is your competition in there lowballing you, or do they come with some other value?
How do you find that out? How do you find out if the other recruiting firm is charging less than you are? You just ask bluntly?
You ask bluntly, or you find out who the competition is, and you should already have some competitive intel on how they operate.
And so
I have a question
here.
Go ahead. Who's that with this
Janice.
First one? Was that Janice? Go ahead.
Yeah. And these employers are going to tell you that, who the competition is and how much they're – that doesn't sound smart.
You only know if you ask.
I agree with that totally, but I can't believe
yeah,
you're going to get
told that. And some of them will and some of them won't. It depends. If they don't, then you'll have an idea of what your relationship is there.
And what's your response when they say, we don't give that information out? Or why do you
okay,
want to know? Fine. How's that? What are you going to say?
I'm just trying to get an idea of, you know, what our competition is here so that we can better make a proposal to meet your needs.
So my question is, you know, you sort of, it sounds like you sort of come from my world. And when we're doing recruiting projects and RPO deals, we're getting undercut price-wise by the nationals left and right. How do you handle that situation as far as trying to discuss that with the client without really explaining, like, sure, one of the nationals is going to be able to provide you a team of recruiters at $30 an hour, but let's talk about the level of recruiter they're providing. I mean, is that the approach that you take?
Exactly. You're going to get what you pay for. You just need to understand what it is you need. And if that's what you need is some low-budget operation to just throw names over the wall, that's what you're going to get. If you want somebody, an organization that's going to add a little more value. Because we know the recruiting value proposition has changed. It's not as much about finding people anymore as it is about picking the right ones out of the mix, right? So you got to demonstrate that you can add more value. And that if they pay a little bit more, they're going to get more for that price.
So
Mike,
as a follow-up question, I lost last year a long-term client to one of the nationals that put a team in there at half the price I was charging. I mean, do you, at the end of the day, do you just walk away from that client and just say, it's obvious what they want, we're not the right solution for them?
No. Mike, ask them how that company did. At the end, I would revisit them.
Maybe they did just fine.
Well,
yeah,
if
I mean,
they did,
you typically say that's going to be a train wreck, and you just say I'll be around to clean up the mess once they make it. And if they don't, then you got to look at it and say, holy cow, people are doing it as good as me for less. I got to do something different.
Well, you might find this comical, but 3 months in, they asked me if I'd come in and train that recruiting team.
There you go, right?
Is Andy Gregory still there? Andy Gregory?
I'm here,
Andy Gregory.
I'm here.
Okay. Would you ever ask your client, what other recruiters are you using, who are they, and how much are they charging you?
Yeah, I've done that. I mean, I agree with Ed that, you know, you're not going to get it if you don't ask.
Do you ask regularly? Is that part of your routine?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to say I ask every time, but, yeah, I mean, I've not every time. So,
and then let me ask something else. If they tell you who it is, do you know who they are? He said you should have some intel on those other companies. People work all over the country now. Long distance is so cheap. You don't know who those other recruiters are. Is it possible?
I do frequently.
Okay, Jerry, you work in the Midwest in a certain,
yep,
generally, you know, a tri-state area, and you work in one niche, IT contractors. So you're going to know, you're going to run
wrong
into the same.
See, again, you'd figure after all the time we spend on the phone, you would know that I'm not just an IT contractor recruiter.
Okay. That's your primary.
But no, if you're recruiting in a specific marketplace, even if you don't ask your client the specific names of the agencies, the candidates you're talking to are going to say, oh, yeah, you know, K-Force called me about that a couple months ago. Or, I mean, you just hear about it.
You know, I think it's a natural question. I mean, I think the more important question when talking about the process is, you know, how many candidates do they have? You know,
ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, how many candidates have? But I think it is a natural, you know, you can make the natural segue from there. Oh, where are you getting these folks from? You know, what are the sources as opposed to, are you working with other recruiters? You know, I mean, you can kind of get there.
Good way around that. That's good.
Right.
I like that.
Okay. Now, I read another article this morning that LinkedIn sent to me. We're almost done, Ed. Hold your horses there, okay?
I'm still with you, pal.
Probably. Now, this is something I always disagree with, but this guy said, accepting a counteroffer is career suicide. Watching your boss scramble to keep you may be a heady experience, but in exchange for that sweet moment, you have squandered your honor, and that's going to haunt you for many years. There's a good chance hiring executives might blacklist you from other employment opportunities. Whenever I deliver a short list, I feel obligated to mention which candidates have accepted counteroffers in the past, and often my client will choose not to proceed with one of those people. Number one, Ed, are counteroffers career suicide?
I think I wouldn't call it career suicide, but I think it's a bad idea.
Why is that, Ed?
Because, you know, what is different about today than yesterday, other than the fact that you're about to leave, and are they really going to appreciate you more? They'll maybe throw you a little more money at you. But all the things that pissed you off that made you want to leave in the first place probably aren't going to change. So it just depends on the circumstances. You know, if it's a situation where the business is going south and you're looking to move before, you know, maybe getting cut, and then they come in and say, look, you know, you're probably concerned about getting cut, but here's what we're going to do to make sure you don't. Then and you have other reasons to stay, then maybe it's not, I wouldn't necessarily call that career suicide.
Can I ask a question on that?
Go ahead, Janice.
Okay. Temp to hire guy gets another offer elsewhere. Company that is employing him, temp to hire, counter offers, and he takes the company he's at. You understand what I'm saying?
That just, you know, makes a body shop even worse. I mean, temp to hire, you're typically hiring body shop people. And
That company found out he wanted to leave, then they offered him a permanent job. Was that bad for him to take it?
Was it bad for him to take it?
Yeah.
I mean, if he's really looking for a permanent job, probably not.
Okay.
But if he was a contractor because he liked being a contractor, then he probably won't have, you know, many friends trying to get the next gig.
I see nothing wrong with it, Janice. I mean, his goal was to get a full-time job, and he started as a contract, liked the place, somebody else offered him the job, so it spurred the.
I think if the motivations are clean, I don't see anything wrong with it.
And he wasn't an exec. Thank you.
If you shop yourself to get an offer so that you can get a counteroffer, that's a little slimy, and I'd say it'll damage your career.
Yep.
Why you don't recruit people by saying, "Hey, I can get you a big raise."
Right.
Okay. Well,
that's one of my pet peeves of recruiting. It's absurd.
Well,
that's how I recruit dates.
Do you want to address that? Do you want to address that, Ed, before we go?
About recruiting dates that way?
No, recruiting.
What's
you know, telling people what the money is, and making money the big lure.
Money might be something you use to close the deal, but definitely not the lure.
What do you mean by that? Come on, this is now you're getting. See, at the end, you're starting to give up the unconscious stuff. Go ahead.
He's getting good. He's getting good.
Because when you're recruiting somebody, you want them interested in the opportunity, in the culture, and in the work. And then sometimes you know, in order to close the deal, to get them to give up their security of what they have, you have to maybe throw a little money around. But
really,
throw the money. If you use money at the front end, you might lure somebody for money, and then they don't like the other stuff, and they don't stay very long.
Well, I don't lure my dates with money, but I do use the big raise.
You can cover that with a counteroffer. You're starting off with a candidate whose sole interest is a big raise. They have no career motivating factors that make them want to move on other than salary, which is what the recruiter got them all hopped up thinking about. That's exactly why they're subject to a counteroffer.
There is a blatant expectation that career move usually means some sort of increase. I mean, you just don't have to use it as the thing to get somebody on the hook with.
Mm-hmm.
You address it when you're closing the deal.
Okay. Last thing, we're out of time, but I wanted to raise this because you wrote about your dad. We had one other recruiter Mo. He was a guest here, and he wrote at length about his father, actually, on his blog, and I told us a good story. But you said about your dad, his love was so unconditional and pure, you could wrap it around you like a blanket. The safety and security it brought to all of us was very tangible. Now, you told one story, but do you want to tell us exactly what you meant by that, or is that just said a general feeling? Very nice.
Well,
what a tribute.
I grew up in a very, very comfortable environment, I never knew. My father did pretty well. He was a CEO of a bank, and I never knew how well he did. I had no idea how much money he made or whether we were wealthy or not. We just had this very, very safe,
spoiled
environment to grow up in, and it was because he just there was absolutely no condition. He once told me when I would stray a little as an adolescent, you know, son, I would do, you know, anything. I will cheat, kill, steal, do anything to protect you. And you know, he was just that kind of dad, and I was very fortunate to have had him growing up.
Thank you for coming.
Okay. Hey, Stringer, are you sticking with us?
For a little bit, yeah. I have an appointment, but I'm here.
Thanks, dear friend. Love to have
you.
No,
thank you, Jerry.
No, thank you. Thank you. I thought that was a good guy. Seemed all right.
Ed is awesome.
Yeah. Anybody that's had his kind of success, I mean, I think deserves respect. The dude's sitting on the beach somewhere just thinking about what he might want to maybe get into next.
Yep.
Love it.
Having sat down with him a few times, I could just, you know, and had those drinks, you know, I could just say he's one of the sharpest guys. I don't know if it completely came through on the show, but he's one of the sharpest guys around.
Now, how did you meet him, Dave? David?
He's at ERE conferences. He's been a speaker. He's been involved when we used to run our ATS reports back in the day. His company was heavily involved with him.
Cool.
You know, Jerry, as someone who founded a company with the hopes that someday a larger company would purchase me, I have to respect that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say one more thing for the guy. When we raise money every year for the ERE Foundation,
yeah.
Ed is always there.
Nice.
Yep.
Very cool. Give me some scores then, Manister. Educationally speaking and entertainment value.
I think I'll take entertainment first. It started off a bit slow, and I do think it picked up as things went on.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd give it, 75?
Uh-huh.
Education, I'd give it the same, actually.
Okay. What about you, A. Stringer?
I'm going to go 60 on the entertainment because I think both the guest and Animal today were both pretty low energy, but I'm going to give him an 80 for the educational value.
Did we find out what he's doing now, though? I had to kind of slip out and take a call for a second. Was that where – did I miss him talking about what he's doing now or what he's thinking of doing?
I didn't catch it.
Hmm. Okay. Is anybody else on the call? Anybody?
Jerry?
Alan Flura.
Jerry?
Yeah, man.
Jerry? You can hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, great. Finally, I've been trying. I called in four times.
Man.
Let's see.
I call in once. If I don't get in, it's over.
Oh, God.
Shut her down.
It was interesting. I'd give him educational 77, entertainment 76.
Hmm.
Got a little slow. He needed a little more coffee, I think, in the beginning.
Maybe he's just a mellow dude. Maybe he's not all caught up in trying to prove who he is and in your face, and he's got his elevator speech ready, you know. Maybe he doesn't need to.
Yeah, I'm on the beach.
Yeah, he's on the beach. What beach,
yeah.
I wonder? Florida? California? Where does he live? Texas?
He's in...
Mobile, Alabama?
He's in Philadelphia. Pennsylvania.
Huh. Okay.
No, cold beaches up there.
Mike, how has the water been this season?
Jerry, we've had a lot of rain, and I actually did pretty serious damage to my props 2 weekends ago on my way to the Chesapeake. In fact, I'm in my office today because my boat is out of the water so they can fix it.
Really? Now, do you send your props in to get them redone?
The place that redoes them is actually where I have the boat worked on as well. So they came and grabbed it this morning, pulled it out of the water, and they're going to fix the prop.
Though we like to call them wheels, though.
That might be a Midwest term. I don't know that anyone calls it that here.
Huh. Actually, the company that makes a lot of them is called Michigan Wheel, by the way.
That is true.
Yeah.
But I have inboards, so I've got those old school giant brass props under my boat.
And you chewed some up, huh?
Yeah, and I'm hoping they can fix it, not replace it, because it's about $800 to replace.
Yeah, man, they're expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody else on the show have a score?
Yeah, Kathy's here.
Kathy Manis.
The
arborist.
Kathy, you gave me my big raise
recruiter
today.
Oh, you're just too kind, Mike. You crack me up. Anyway, I'd say entertainment, it did start off slow, so I would give it like a 65. But educationally, I think he hit on something that has really been bothering me too, which is I think the white males have been discriminated against due to diversity. And 10 years ago, I knew that was happening, and I'm glad someone brought it up. So I'd have to give him an 80 on education.
Yeah, you know, it's almost like we're not really allowed to talk about.
I know. I'm afraid to even say it right now. I know.
Yeah.
But I did bring it up at a conference when they were talking about diversity. And I said, wait in 6 years, you know, the 45-year-old white male is going to be the next, you know, protected class.
So should we be running around saying that the Hispanic and African-American man is keeping us down?
No, but I think if I'm not mistaken, I think they have just made it so that the 45 to 50 year old white males are now a protected class. I read that somewhere.
See, I don't like the assumption that someone's skin color affords.
I know.
The hiring of them equals diversity.
Right.
Do you have to? Yeah, you have to cast the widest net possible, and you include the diversity ones to simply increase that net. And that's just, and you're looking for the best person. Doesn't matter where they come from. And when they get wrapped up in diversity, they end up losing sight of finding the best people.
And finding the best qualified sometimes.
If I could share a quick story. Before I was in recruiting, I was a department manager in a casino. And I remember vividly I had an opening in my department. HR came to me, and I had no HR experience at that point, and said, you don't have enough African-Americans and you don't have enough women in your department. Your next hire needs to be an African-American woman. And they would not give me approval to hire anyone that was not an African-American woman.
Well, it's gone so far as some, several times over the past year, I've had specific situations where it was mandated, big companies, that you must hire a diversity candidate. Well, how is that diversity? It's a topic that bugs me.
Well, when I did one in the Bay Area for a major university, they demanded provable diversity recruiting, and we did that. We provided them all the stuff, and then at the end, they ended up hiring a white male, and it was the best candidate. And we brought in a whole diverse team of potential candidates, and they appreciated it. And at the end, it was, here's the best person. So they were very forward-thinking, and they actually didn't let it get in their way. They saw the value in, let's make sure we do capture everybody. And it is just one more data point. And the other thing, to be frank, is there are few diversity places, associations, that actually get back to people in our business because through a lot of experience, having reached out to these and saying, great, we'd love to let your association, your members know about this. We think you've got some wonderful people probably that would be very interested in this. And 2 months later, after following up, you get somebody who says, "Oh, we just saw your notification. We'll post it." It's like, "Well, thank you very much. The position has been filled." So,
well, there you have it. Anybody else have a show score? Anybody? Is anybody still on the line? See, I tell you, Animal starts off with quite a few people calling in, and they eventually bail throughout the hour. And I'm left with just the troopers, which is cool. But I think we've come to the end of the after show. I'm just swamped here.
Super
I bet you were on light duty.
Well, that's what happens when you're on light duty, when the office days are super busy. I'm on as light of duty as I can be, which is, you know how it is.
You know what? I've just said that because it's boating season, I'm scheduling no phone screens on Fridays. I do invoicing, payroll, you know, clerical stuff until lunchtime, and then I'm done till Monday.
Nice. Yeah, I've got to do invoicing twice a week now. Hope you all have a great week.
Thanks,
see you,
Jerry. I'll call you.
Yeah, man. See y'all later.
Okay, bye.
I'm going to give you the same kind of interview as if you were, you're looking for a job. If you were coming to me for a job, I'm going to ask you the same, very same questions. But we've got a panel interview here. Anybody on the panel is welcome to butt in and ask a question or a follow-up. Is that okay?
Yeah, no problem.
You guys, are you in on this? Do you have some questions? You start thinking about them. Okay, Alex, first question. Have you ever heard that Eskimos have 32 different words for snow?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, okay. They were. They do. Anybody else know that?
I knew that.
Okay, yeah. So, well, I was going to ask her, if you were a snowflake, which word would apply to you? That's a pretty good one, eh?
Oh, my gosh. Come on.
Well, Lena, we can change it. Alex, if you were a snowflake, what color would you be?